this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome back to Y'allitics. We have a guest on today who's actually heard this podcast before.
Not only heard it, but really likes it.
You know, maybe he tells every podcast host this, but we're going to buy it today.
Listen, that's okay. We will buy anything.
Harrison Blair is the president and CEO of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. Hey, thanks for being here. And
are we doing the? Is this the first of a tradition?
It's a new tradition here, man.
Yeah, let's start it. Mm. All right, Harrison, what are you having?
So this is the Peacekeeper.
Okay,
and this is from Manhattan Breweries.
Yeah, this is the Manhattan Project here in Dallas, and
West Dallas. Even though Oak Cliff likes to claim this,
we'll take it. We'll claim
it. It's an old favorite of ours here too. We come here quite a bit, but you selected that one, the Peacekeeper, for a reason.
The Peacekeeper, I think, is very emblematic of what we do at the Chamber. And as we get ready to break into a policy conversation, we never go in and start, you know, standing on top of tables and throwing chairs unless it's necessary. But you know, a wise policymaker who's relatively new, but wise in his ways. Benton Jones from House District 100, yeah. he trained us and said, hey, when you go in, firstly you seek to understand, then you seek to be understood. So there may be some things about policy and legislation that we don't know from a particular policy writer, and we want to ask them why. What is this intended to do? And then we will share what we believe, and then we'll try to meet somewhere in the middle. But it doesn't always have to be an argument. It can be more of a debate that helps make Texas better for citizens, residents, and the business community that we represent.
So the Peacekeeper's apropos to the conversation. And what are you having today, Wheeler?
I'm continuing my sour tour that I've been on lately. I don't know. You know how you get on a kick
fit
with
your personality.
Things. I guess it does. And I'm having the Bikini Atoll Raspberry.
Nice.
Which is really good. It's very refreshing.
And I'm going back to the easy one, the old favorite, the old standby here, the Necessary Evil.
Such an old man. Always choose the same thing.
I do that a lot. I get the same thing.
You do that a lot. I know
go.
That.
I mean, it's the same food, the same drinks, whatever, but because it's easy. But they do have, you know, I am a fan of Manhattan Project. It's near my house too, but they have several new beers on here. The Gold Flash.
Yes.
Is one of them too, a Honey Lager.
I'm interested in, I think this is a new one as well, the Nuclear Winter Mole. It is an Imperial Stout, 11% alcohol by volume. So that's a real one.
We right
there. And everything is atomic theme.
A little bit atomic on that one for sure.
Manhattan Project.
So let's get into this. So we're talking about State Rep Benton Jones, who represents District 100, Southern Dallas. And you guys are always looking at legislation. Every time the legislature meets, every 2 years, all groups are, all entities are, and organizations across the state. But you guys sent out an alert to your members and said that you guys are on high alert for four different bills. Now, why are these four bills different than normal?
Because in a state that is growing with diversity, hand over fist, these bills are going to cap people who come from diverse backgrounds' opportunity to actually access the state of Texas in terms of grants, in terms of contracts. And then one of them in particular deals with transportation. This is an issue that is local in nature. And now local municipalities and their governments are asking the state to get engaged in something that local governments really need to work out.
So Harrison, you know, as the leader of the Dallas Black Chamber, you were saying that you try to listen first and you try to understand the motivation behind different things. Have you been able to get sort of that explanation for these four bills and did that ease any concern?
So we are still working to actually get some meetings. The closest we've gotten to a meeting is with Representative Don McLaughlin, and his bill actually just cuts the historically underutilized business program from the state code. It doesn't try to address anything. It doesn't try to fix any perceived problems. It just simply cuts it from the state code, and that's House Bill 3573. This is a high alert bill because HUB not only supports small businesses that are of color from all across the state, but it mostly supports 90% of the small businesses in the state of Texas, regardless of if you meet HUB certification or not. So cutting the program will have disparate impacts that I'm not sure the representative is completely aware of, or his staff. And so it's our job to make sure that they know. But also, there may be some things the rep is aware of that we're not aware of. And this is why we firstly seek to understand. I want to know why he wants to move this wall. And does he know what structures it's supporting before we move it?
And is it hard to get these meetings with these lawmakers?
Oh, yes. And it's difficult not because they don't want to meet. I find that lawmakers always want to meet with reps or people from the district or people around the district that have an issue that's going to be impacting a specific community. However, everybody wants to meet with them. Mm. When I worked at the State House, there were so many different associations that would come in. A real example is there was the Alpaca Association and the Llama Association, and they competed.
There's a Llama Association?
There's a real Llama Association.
Well, wow. And they were in competition with each other.
They were in competition. And you know, if you work down there, they come by and they drop legislation. I just want to leave this packet of information for the representative. And so it was our job to register that information. So I'm very familiar with how the policy goes and how people move from move these pieces of legislation from an idea to a committee and how it gets heard and read and then it gets to the floor and potentially gets voted upon. So all these bills are currently making their way slowly through that process. But as we get closer to June, we got to start talking to reps because now it's time to vote.
But that background has to help you, though, having been in the State House.
Oh, man. So the State House, city government and different municipalities, county government, federal government, and on both sides of the aisle. Hmm. So I understand how important it is to go in and be kind to staff. You never know which staffer is carrying that bill. The legislative aide may be in charge, and the rep is saying, hey, I'm getting this bill and I'm sponsoring it. I'm carrying the water. But this rep is the person who has the control and is going to actually move that bill forward.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good point, though, too. I shout out to our political producer, Bernadine Steptoe, all the time. Make sure
I love Bernadine. I'm her biggest fan.
Make sure you know the staff, though, because the staff are the ones who are always around. They're the ones who can get things to the representative and, you know how to navigate.
Make the wheels turn.
Say if you absolutely. The rep might be the head, but you need the neck because the neck is controlling the turning movements. And you want the neck to look at your concerns.
I'm stealing that.
Good point there. Let's lay out these four bills here. You mentioned one of them. So the first one here is going to be House Bill 167.
Yes, sir.
It says governmental entities can no longer use DEI in hiring or promoting. The second bill is House Bill 3187. This is a little different. This is the one that would take money from DART, the Dallas Area Regional
Rapid Transit,
and use that for non-infrastructure projects. Mm-hmm. And then the other two are a little similar also. 3573 is in the House. That's the one you mentioned, which would eliminate hub businesses, historically underutilized businesses
as
from the state code.
Completely.
And then the final one is House Bill 4784. Mm-hmm. State agencies cannot use DEI in hiring, contracts, curricula, et cetera. Let's go back and start with, let's take the three DEI bills essentially here, and then we'll break apart the DART bill there. So House Bill 167 is referred to in its own language as the Ending Institutional Racism Act. You can't use race, color, ethnicity. This is something that Republicans have wanted to do for a long time. Let me ask you this. When I saw this, and just knowing the history for affirmative action and where Republicans stand on it, I thought back to last fall. A larger than usual number of black men voted for Donald Trump. Donald Trump has espoused these ideas for a long time on killing DEI at the federal level as well, too. Have you had any pushback at all from your position on this?
So the interesting part is the people who might have voted for Trump, I'm sure some of them are entrepreneurs and business owners, but the business owners I'm working with, they have $400,000 or $500,000 wrapped up in these programs that they haven't been paid, and they're nervous that they may never get it. They have contracts that they're trying to get with the state. The folks that I'm hearing from are out of Amarillo, and they're saying, hey, this sounds good in Washington, but it's going to hurt me. I'm a first-time small business owner, and now I have the capacity to do this contracting. I've just spent thousands of dollars becoming certified, and now I'm in the utilization phase of this contract. I think the idea is that anybody who might have voted for that is thinking, well, I don't like handouts and I don't believe we should give handouts. But I would argue they're arguing against their own interests. It's not a handout. It takes thousands of dollars, hundreds of hours, lots of paperwork, and a bunch of consultants to actually get access to your state contracts. And the result of it is that on any given year, you might have less than 1% of small businesses, specifically from black community, getting any state contract while they're paying taxes. And on a good year, it's like 1.6%.
That's it.
That's it. And so
that's a good year.
That's a good. That's hitting it out of the park. That's Tiger Woods at the Masters in the early days.
So this
is the status of affairs, and that's why we say they're targeting certain demographics with this legislation, or at least we think so. Until we get a meeting, there's no way to confirm. But what we know right now is, if this legislation does pass, this is what great minds and think tanks, committees that are looking at this think will happen.
You know, is it hard to, you know, we talk about getting a meeting with the lawmakers who filed these individual bills. Is it hard to try to get to other lawmakers and convince them of your position? Because you look at some of these bills, and on the surface, to the layperson, you know, they have, you know, phrases in them like must treat people and entities equally, regardless of race, color, and origin. A governmental entity may not award a contract to provide preferential treatment to a person submitting a bid. This sounds very much like, hey, we just want a level playing field.
But what it means is that most Texans probably are not in the weeds about how these policies work. And so DEI could mean or sound like, you know, this guy got this contract or this lady got this contract and she's not qualified. But they don't know she spent or he spent thousands of dollars, hundreds of hours, and then they got the right to compete. They didn't just get in the pool. Now, if I'm not a HUB certified business or an MWBE business, I just walk into the room, I go to City Hall, I listen to the meeting, at the interest meeting, I turn in my application, and if my bid's low enough, voila, I've won. That's really closer to what is the issue. Now, if there's anything that needs to happen, these programs obviously need to be audited. If only 1% or less than 1% of these contracts are going to a population that makes up somewhere around 12% of the state, we got an imbalance. Now, that we do need to call an inquiry on, but just taking away the entire certification process basically by taking the teeth out of it doesn't help. Or saying that we can't mention anything about where we come from or who we are doesn't help. We know, because historically in this country and this state, of laws that have impacted people who look like us and where we come from, that they have not always had equal access to these systems. It may make some people uncomfortable to talk about it, but if you run a business, you don't have the option of not working or living in reality. If I can't pay people, it has nothing to do with a culture war. They're just going to go find a better job, or I'm ruining communities that of people who looked up to me. And so I'm saying this to our state reps, we would like to understand, we'd like to get that meeting, we'd like to know more. And to be frank about it, we're not the only chamber who goes down there. We partner with the Greater Dallas Hispanic Chamber, which is the second oldest Hispanic institution in the state, and in the country, I believe. And on top of all of that, we work with a bunch of other partners who are also concerned that this might have disparate impacts on all Texans, not just Texans of color.
House Bill 3573, you mentioned a moment ago, which would eliminate HUB, historically underutilized businesses. I've worked with some of these as a contractor to go teach in different places. But what would this mean if HUB is eliminated? Would these minority and women small-owned businesses not be guaranteed a slice of the pie at all anymore, so a bigger company could come in and Bigfoot everyone?
That could be a part of it. That could be a potential impact. It also means that if you can't talk about diversity, not only in small business, but at education, you might lose some of the best professors or some of the best educators. They're taking DEI out of everything, and it's something that is hard to not talk about in a state where diversity is increasing hand over foot every day. The state is growing, but it's growing with black and brown residents and people from all over the world. Dallas is positioning itself to be seen as a global city. How do we do that if I can't talk about all the things that make us different, which is what makes us great?
Isn't this all about messaging, though? Isn't there another way? You know, DEI is a bad word right now. Climate change, a bad word. Isn't there another way to message this so you still get what you want with lawmakers?
We could just call it equity. We could they don't have to say diversity at all.
I don't have my thesaurus out here, but I'm sure there's a different word that would be a little softer to everyone
now. They could just call it American equity.
Yeah.
Because when we say black, we mean American. When I say Hispanic or Latino, I mean American. When I say Asian, I mean American. They are all what make America great, all the different cultural aspects of it. I wouldn't be drinking this beer with great hops if maybe somebody from Germany hadn't discovered how to really get the greatness out of hops. Maybe not coffee if somebody in parts of Africa didn't figure out how to really get the greatness out of a coffee bean. And not to mention all the international trade and goodwill and the soft power that America has wielded it everywhere, because people like us, because we like them. But what happens when you turn that off and you say you're actually not welcome here? Or what happens when diversity in the state continues to grow, but not everybody has access to the opportunity, but they're paying taxes? That just doesn't seem fair, doesn't seem American, and quite frankly, it doesn't seem very Texan, and it doesn't seem very business friendly.
How much do allies matter here, and how much are you trying to rally allies here? Because, you know, for instance, if you look at HB 167, one of the DEI bills that's been proposed here, I mean, part of the bill text basically says that for somebody to be economically disadvantaged, they have to meet certain qualifications, and they crossed out, Black Americans, Hispanic Americans, women. Really all that was left was veterans in there who can be considered to be, you know, targeted for discrimination there. How much do you reach out to these other groups like women and Hispanic Americans and say, hey, you know, we're putting out a red alert about this bill. You should be too.
So the beauty of that alert is, one, it reached media in high places, obviously, so that's good. But it also got to partners. Those partners have been down in Austin with us. They may not be as vocal on camera. They may not have a staffer who's going to put a camera in their face and say, speak the points and make them clear in 30 seconds. Yep. But they are there with us. You have Margo Posey, who leads the MSDC here in Dallas. You have the Hispanic Chamber, Rick Ortiz and his staff, who invited us to come down. We're going down next week with the Asian Chamber, the Hispanic Chamber in unison. We've all rented a bus together. Coalitions are important to everything we do, because we know that everybody in the state of Texas is what makes it great. Not just one culture, but all cultures. Everybody has something that they brought to the table and are consistently bringing to the table. So, and this has been a part of the chamber's play since 1926 as America's oldest Black chamber. We've always had
Dallas
to work in concert, of all places. And, and the Hispanic Chamber is the second oldest Hispanic institution in the country. I think San Antonio is the first.
Wow.
And then I think the Houston Black Chamber is the second oldest Black chamber in the state. And then our state Black Chamber is the third oldest Black chamber.
You guys have quite a history here. Mm-hmm. The last bill is House Bill 4784 under the DEI umbrella here, too. And this is the one that encompasses, eliminates DEI from all state rules, policies, hiring, contracts, curricula, et cetera. This is a one-page bill, like a half a page. Mm-hmm. It seems pretty straightforward there. Here's kind of the overall question. None of these bills have moved. Mm-hmm. We're more than halfway through the legislature right now.
Sitting in committees.
They're sitting in committees. They haven't even had hearings at all. And like I said earlier, some of these ideas aren't new on this. What do you think has the best chance of getting heard with 6 weeks left?
So I'm looking at the bills with the lower numbers. They're all kind of corresponding to when they've been filed and when they'll be heard, because thousands and thousands of bills are filed. So these bills get referred to committee, and then they start to get heard in committee, and then they may get out of committee to the floor. If any of these get to the floor, probably have a very high chance of passing. But right now, 167 is the lower number bill. It's already been referred to state committee. We have friends on state committee, like Madam Yvonne Davis, who's a state rep out of Dallas, and a couple of other friends who are also there, like I believe Rafael Anchia, who is a friend to small business also. So we're hopeful that they can help us plug the hole on any legislation that would actually harm the state. And I think it's important to call out that this legislation is not just going to harm small Black businesses or small businesses of color. It's going to harm everybody in the state. If you make the pie smaller, then everybody feels that. But they can also hand out plates, forks, and knives and make sure the pie gets bigger. These policies seem to benefit other states, places like California. And I actually want to look at these reps and make sure they don't have land or any kind of opportunities in other states that do have these policies, because those states could grow, because they recognize that diversity is an important impact to businesses. If you can get the best talent from every community, you're really going to win. This is how you keep, you know, in marketing, for example, racist commercials from hitting the air. That's how you make sure your luxury products don't offend one group. You have somebody from that community who's talented at the table, and they'll let you know. And now, instead of losing sales or trying to defend your company, i.e. Target, you have the opportunity to actually improve your sales and improve your customer base. Why would a business not want to do that? Who wants to say, no, I don't want your money? Your money's no good in capitalism.
Well, Jason asked you a moment ago about other groups, other chambers. Have you heard from women groups at all? Because they stand to lose a lot, along with Hispanics, Asians, LGBTQ as well.
Absolutely. And they're very vocal about all of what might happen. And they're talking to us about how this legislation will directly impact them. They call us about jobs that have already been lost. And in a lot of instances, they didn't realize
state jobs, state contracts?
State contracts and state contracts and jobs that could potentially be lost. Every time I went to a director of a department at the state, the first thing they wanted to talk about was HUB. When I went to Health and Human Services, they start pulling out HUB numbers. And I said, hey, that's great. HUB's not under attack right now. I want to talk about hospitals schools, not being in certain communities that we want them in. But now, as we look at HUB, the people who run those departments are at risk. The people who are getting contracts from those departments are at risk, and they have certainly called. There are millions of dollars tied up in these programs, and if they go away tomorrow, there's going to be a scramble to make sure that we deal with the fallout from that. And that's really at the heart of why we want to meet with our reps. I want to know what their plans are. What impact might this have on residents and citizens that come from different communities?
I don't think people realize there are entire businesses who only do government contracts. Mm-hmm. Who only do government contracts.
And stay busy all the time on that.
Right.
A government is one of the biggest purveyors of contracts.
Sure.
RFQs, RFIs, RFPs. And so for that to go away, they're cutting out a demographic who even has the opportunity to compete. That means we might be losing out on cheaper, better deals as a state. And that impacts the way they spend all of our tax dollars.
So we've been talking about allies here, and we've spoken about women and other minority groups and so forth. I'm curious, is there an ally? Do you speak with just a chamber of commerce? Do you have an ally there? Is there someone there to speak up and go, hey, let's try to keep some of this in place?
So right now, because most chambers are small institutions that work with small businesses and maybe a few corporations, we are the activists. We are the advocates who go down. And so I get together with bands of other CEOs, executive directors, and we go talk to these legislators. We are not there to argue. We are there to primarily build relationships. It's very hard to pass a policy that's going to hurt somebody, pass policy against them if you know them, you have a relationship with them. Hey, I like Harrison, and he told me that this is going to happen. He's a reputable source out of Dallas. Let's really reconsider this. Maybe we don't kill a piece of legislation. Maybe we shape it in a different way that's helpful for all Texans. Because if that's what legislators are there to do, make life easier for all of us, then that's mostly what we're there to do. And that's why my drink today is the Peacemaker. We want to make peace. We want to help make Texas better for everybody. I want it to continue to grow hand over fist. And I want it to be a safe place for a person like me to raise a family and grow a business.
Hey, how much do have DEI programs or historically underutilized business programs? You meet a lot of business owners. You talk with business owners every day. Surely you know of people who, if these hadn't been in place, their extraordinary business would never have even begun.
It takes an opportunity completely out of the market. We work with businesses all day, every day, and I can't tell you how many times I've had to pass the box of Kleenex back across the table to businesses who are afraid their livelihood, their future, something they hope to pass on to family or to sell and get great value out of and pass the wealth on to family may be gone. So it's a pernicious issue that won't go away, and unfortunately, we've had to face down attacks every time that we're in session to stop legislation like this. Last session, we were able to stop some legislation, again, in coalition with many different organizations, and I think that's what it's going to take this time.
Some listening to this are going to say, listen, DEI really kind of came into the common vernacular 5-6 years ago. Is this really that rooted? What would you tell them?
It's been rooted. If you wanted to find programs to find some of the best people and get them engaged in your company, if we wanted to talk about all the record growth that we've seen over 40, 50 plus years because of diversity, equity, and inclusion, it's been deeply rooted in everything we've done. And knowing and understanding race as a concept and pointing at it has been a part of American society since the very beginning. Mm-hmm. This time we're pointing at it and saying, hey, maybe we can get equity around these different groups. Maybe we can get them engaged. And I would argue that people who feel that way probably don't look at the state numbers and how contracts are doled out or if it's actually a fair process. So I think this is a proper time to call for an inquiry into some of these departments to see why aren't we able to get some of these numbers up with other populations as opposed to cutting it.
And not to overstate or misstate, how many jobs do you think might be on the line if these policies are gotten rid of?
Somewhere between 2 and 5 million jobs.
2 and 5 million jobs in the state?
In Texas.
Across the state. And wow. It's because it's the impact. It's not just the direct DEI jobs. It's the layoffs from companies. And it's also these municipalities and governments who will now not give out contracts. Well, if by 167, I can't even put who I am or what I represent in my contract anymore or my bid. I get no points for that. And I don't hire people. So just imagine all those jobs that might be lost. Mm. We looked at our own economic impact numbers and we tabulated that it could be on the high end about 5 million people who are impacted across the entire state. And they're not all black and brown. They're just people who are regular everyday Texans, small business owners, entrepreneurs, nonprofit leaders, government employees. Mm.
That's the first domino then, you know, when we talk about all of those jobs potentially being lost. But talk a little bit about communities and what that does to a community. Let's say, you know, the black community here in Dallas. What happens if that first domino gets pushed down and you lose a lot of black-owned businesses? What happens in the community? Because there's knock-on effects.
It's a shrinkage of the economy there. And this is particularly frightening because Dallas is known as a deal town. Texas, they call it the Texas miracle for a reason. Policies have been in place to make it easy to do business here. But now the question will be, who is it easy for? Who is it easy for to get the contract from the state? And a lot of times if you get a local contract, which is where you start to grow, and you get your state contract, then you get your SAM number with the United States government, and you get federal contracts, all of these opportunities are now taken from you as the rug gets pulled from under you. And this is typically what happens in America when they see communities gaining traction, growing businesses, having confidence in doing business, not only in Texas but across the country. We don't want the rug pulled from under us. And I think if you see that, you'll start to see a shrinkage of infrastructure. You'll see a shrinkage of these communities themselves.
I want to ask about the pipeline, too, here, because, you know, we look at the census population from 2024, and it says that white people account for almost 40% of the population in Texas, but the black population is 13.6%. Okay, so it's roughly a third of what the white population is. And yet you look at business ownership here, and black business ownership is roughly one-fifth that of white business ownership in this state. How much do you lose that pipeline of people who have that entrepreneurial spirit if things like this pass? Because they think, well, you know what, maybe, you know, I'm not going to be able to get in. I'm not going to be able to get those contracts. I'm not going to be able to, you know, sustain this business.
And this is why I said I'm wondering if any of these reps have interests in California, because I'm going to places like that that accept my business. Yeah, I might have to pay a higher tax. I might have to pay a higher premium on everything, including talent. But if I got to do business and I want to make sure I'm able to get access to state resources that have been set aside for me, then I got to go places where I'll be able to access it. So that's what happens to our pipeline. We lose talent. The universities lose some of the best professors. We lose access. Mm. And so people are not going to, the need is not going to go away. Just the access points will.
Let's shift off to House Bill 3187. This is the Regional Transportation Authorities. This bill would essentially move money, 25% of the money that DART brings in, would move that to be used to build and maintain sidewalks, hiking trails, biking trails, highways, local streets, thoroughfares, street lights, traffic signals. My question is, we just did a story at WFAA about the infrastructure deserts in parts of southern Dallas. No sidewalks, you know, busted streets, things like that. Why isn't this a good thing? Why isn't House Bill 3187 a good thing to help these municipalities that are already cash-strapped build infrastructure?
Because it's helping them build infrastructure specifically to those small cities. It's saying that we don't need each other. And it's going to hurt the population that travels between Dallas and the member cities to actually get to work or to service the area and the economy that they work in. They may live in a different city, but they work in Plano, or they work in Irving, or they work in Frisco. And to take away that transit is not only harming those individuals, but it's also going to harm those cities. It's going to harm small business.
But you say take away transit. I mean, they're not talking about taking away transit. You just think that might be a byproduct of this.
It will absolutely be a byproduct of it. If they can't afford to run those routes, they're going to take away a lot of the different access points. They're going to take away bus routes. They're going to lose something like almost half of the staff of DART. And this is problematic because DART took out a $30 billion bond and borrowed against that to provide all of this transportation to all of these cities. Sidewalks are nice. Those need to be addressed. Infrastructure within these small cities needs to be addressed, but we also need to make sure that we don't ruin big opportunities for the entire region.
But you think that this bill would give people at city halls a chance to build sidewalks at the expense of bus routes or rail routes?
If you take it away from the transit system, it loses jobs, it loses functionality, and since most of the infrastructure is actually based in Dallas, then we start losing routes for some of the people who really rely on it to get around, who don't have transportation in a very diverse and spread out economy.
Yeah, that final mile.
So you're saying that these non-transit infrastructure projects that this would help to fund would be, yes, good at for the, black communities.
But at the cost of us being able to
at the cost of the greater good.
Yeah, you may never walk on that sidewalk because now your bus route no longer runs you up that way. Mm. So it's a it's a catch-22. Greater sidewalks, but can you get there?
I'm wondering, too, if the word shall is what got you into the fight on this bill, because it stood out to me because it basically says that all the municipalities that are under DART shall enter into an agreement to, you know, essentially take up to 25% of DART's their funding for DART. Shall says do it. It doesn't say may or
you
could
must.
Or yeah. It's basically a must. So it is saying go get that money.
And this is a local issue. This is a local issue between municipalities who've agreed that we all needed transportation across the region because I want to move freely to other cities and I want them to come freely to our city. And so this impacts all kinds of things like the 2026 FIFA World Cup, which one match is like a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
We're getting, I think, somewhere between 6 and 9 of these matches, and they came because we have public transit. You can't apply for the Olympics if you don't have an important mass public transit system. So We're shooting ourselves in the foot, and we're making other states look shinier and better because we have a state that's now weighing in on a very important local issue. And when we talk about the Texas miracle, most of it is couched right here in North Texas. So we're shooting ourselves in the foot. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm hoping that the different mayors of these towns, the DART board, and the good folks working on it all across have good faith and want to make sure that we build the region, which will in turn build great cities. There has to be funding at the state level for all these different infrastructure projects that exist. We have a huge rainy day fund. Surely some of that can be tapped for something like this without harming things that we're actually building and scaling around transportation.
They don't touch the savings account at all.
No.
So, that's hands off.
Been sitting there a long
and
time.
In any other investment strategy, you never just leave capital sitting. It's supposed to be in circular motion to make more money for investors. Mm. But for some reason at the state, that's not a good investment in sidewalks or infrastructure in these towns. They'd rather take it from DART.
So before, my last question here, before you came to the Dallas Black Chamber, you worked for a number of lawmakers.
I worked for a number of lawmakers.
So you mentioned this early on, how, you know, different groups will walk into an office. I've been in these offices in Austin and in D.C. Group will come in. I'm from the Alpaca Association of Texas. I want you to look at this. These are the bills important to us. What's the secret of getting a meeting with the lawmaker, of texting that lawmaker, of opening a line of communication? Because they hear from a lot of constituents.
Firstly, you have to visit quite often. It took 3 visits to get some of these reps who we never met with before to say, oh, okay, hey, this guy's been in here 3 or 4 times. He's got the same suit. He's got that tie with the Capitol monuments on it. Who is that guy?
Do you ever take anything? Like chips, treats, or anything? Or
so
six-pack? You can get a six-pack here from...
We're not lobbyists, so we try not to bribe them. Yeah. We take good vibes, goodwill, and great relationship-building skills. We meet with the staff. We leave our card, and we're very courteous. We're kind. We try to make sure they know we're here to build a relationship because you're the...
But from the inside, when you were on the inside receiving these cards, what made you pull one aside and say, hey, representative, we got to call this person back?
So a lot of it for us is just, one, we're structured in how we're looking at these different policies. I might be the face of a particular policy that we are opposing or going for, but there are all these different committees, think tanks, and folks who are strategizing with us to make sure we know where to go. There's an organization behind me supporting me to make sure we're not making the wrong decisions, and I represent the organization. So I'm also held accountable to making sure that we stick to the talking points. This is what our community has designated, and this is what they want. So they're telling me, hey, Harrison, can we grab Matt Shaheen and just have a quick convo with him? Do you have a relationship? That's my job, to go make the relationship. And you can't always do that by throwing bombs. Sometimes you got to throw a brisket and make a friend.
Throw a brisket, not a bomb. I love it. You are the peacemaker.
Have you talked to Representative Shaheen?
So we've met with Representative Shaheen's chief of staff.
And he's the one carrying the bill about the DART money.
And we've stopped by his office and bugged him nonstop. We'll be in Austin this Thursday at 8 o'clock to speak on a hearing specifically for this piece of legislation. So we're there quite often. We'll be back again. I'll be down there one day each week until sigh and die. So we will be there.
Sigh and die.
I know.
Can you flash your tie to the camera here? And for folks who are not watching us but are listening, is this the tie that you really wear every time you go down?
I wear this tie. Well, mostly. I try to wear different ties. Keep it interesting. But I wear this tie also because my dad left this to me when he passed away.
Aww.
It's one of the few ties. He was also involved in community engagement and this kind of work. So
Has sentimental value.
Has sentimental value. And maybe some good luck. And representatives seem to like it. So they say, hey, this guy gets it.
Because it's got capital shots all over it.
It's got capital shots on it. And this is an older tie, so it doesn't have some of the newer monuments in D.C.
It's very OG.
And it's got some Texas ones on there. So, you know, just I love the work. I love meeting these representatives. It doesn't matter if we agree on everything. That's not the point. They're supposed to be different views on things, but how quickly can we get to the middle on something and figure out how we make Texas better? That's what we want to do, and I'm hoping that that's what some of the folks across the aisle want to do as well.
Well, I'm curious, too, like when you sat down to look at all the bills, again, thousands are filed, was it hard to narrow it down to just four?
So it was very difficult, but once these four kind of emerged back in February, January, they became a critical focus of not just us, but other partners. Because just like you saw our alert, we saw a lot of other alerts. Yeah. And so we copied some of these ideas because in nonprofit space, there's a lot more cooperation than competition.
And as a former denizen of the House, you know, you listen to rookies like us going, oh, but these are just in committee. You know that things can move pretty quickly
they
toward the end.
They can move quickly. If they get a nice call, they can whip them and move them very quickly. So you have to stay top of mind for them. Right now, we want to make sure people are aware because small businesses who are actually in these districts where this legislation is coming from, they have a chance to really make great impact. And they'll have a great time being involved in the process. When people see what actually happens in Austin and that it's not like a bloodbath, but more of like a war of words, a duel of ideas, they like that. People want to go express their ideas to their elected officials. That's what the program and system's about.
So last thing here, as you appeal to these other groups, as you appeal to lawmakers, I would imagine that you also are putting out an appeal to the regular citizenry, because again, you used to be on the inside and you know those phone calls, those emails that come in do move the needle. Mm-hmm. Are you trying to get people to, you know, ring up their legislator?
So we ask them to ring up the legislator. We ask them to come and visit with us. We usually provide transportation. We've taken small groups. We've taken large groups. We also influence letter writing campaigns. Put your thoughts on paper. Send them in. Put your address on it. Let them know you're from this district and that it matters to you. And I tell them, remain courteous even in your letter. This person is elected. They have the authority and the power. They don't have to listen to you, but it would be nice. So we try to go in. And that's why I say don't throw briskets, not bombs. Really talk to people, get to know them and make a connection. It's very hard to vote against somebody that you know and love.
I'm stealing that as well. The briskets and bombs.
That's a good point.
Y'all are ticks.
On the way out here, that's a good point. Make a connection.
Make a connection.
Because there's so many people seem disconnected right now when it comes to politics. So.
Well, I think it's missing.
Yeah. And we want to make friends. People have given crazy ideas in front of us that we think would nuke our community, but we want to listen. Maybe there's some truth in it. Maybe there's something we don't understand, but help us understand.
You've been at the Manhattan Project too long today, because now you're talking about nuking communities.
Oh my God, it's the Manhattan Project.
Harrison Blair, he's the president and CEO of the Dallas Black Chamber of Commerce. He's also the peacekeeper in this conversation. Harrison?
Let's
thank
do a toast
sir.
On the way
appreciate
out.
It. Cheers to y'all.
I'm glad that you guys are even having some here tonight. I mean, come on, guys.
You're always ahead of everybody.
I have shorter questions. I have more time to drink.
Locally brewed beer. Always, it's
really special. Good. Thanks to the Manhattan Project, as always. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.